Welcome to the realm of heroes and monsters. Storytime with your host, A.P. Fuchs. Stories of intrigue, stories of horror, stories of superheroics, stories of monsters. Get ready, the thrill ride begins.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the latest episode of the realm of heroes and monsters, Storytime with A.P. Fuchs. And that guy happens to be me. Now, if you're watching this on YouTube, okay, you'll notice there's a completely different background. We're trying something a bit different. There's reasons, one of them being I don't want to sit on a wooden chair, and the reason I'm on a wooden chair in the studio right now is for other reasons, and it's a long story. Anyway, we're on something soft, so we got a new background, and hope it's a nice little change up for you guys. But yeah, welcome to the show. I'm really excited about the story that you're about to hear. It's about medium length. I mean, it's a short story, but in terms of short story length, I would suggest it's around a medium length short story. And it deals with one of my personal fears, which I get into a bit in the story behind the story segment of this podcast. So yeah, all I want you guys to do is just sit back and relax. And for this one, I think particularly, I mean, I'm not going to tell you how to listen to it because I don't know how you're listening to it. Maybe you're on the commute to work. I don't know. But if you're able to, this is one of those ones where it'd be nice if you could just, you know, get comfy on the couch or on the bed or wherever, lay the head back, close the eyes, and just listen and try to imagine and to really imagine and try to feel what's being described and just imagine all the sensations. And I hope by doing that, using your imagination, and you try to use your senses involved with the imagination. I hope that will add to the story. I hope it will add to the intensity of this story. And I hope it will actually even frighten you a little bit. Because this particular story is, if you were in this circumstance, you'd be scared too. What is it? Well, listen and find out. Like a worm. The sweat that coated his skin was thick, like oil. Each lungful of air was like breathing deeply on a muggy night after the rain. The air was warm inside his lungs. Gary Smith couldn't see anything. Darkness and isolation hung on the air almost as thick as the humidity. He didn't know where he was, but one thing was certain. It was a cramped space, tight, weighing in from all sides. He lay on his stomach, and the ground beneath his belly was like a moist sponge covered in breadcrumbs. This sponge pressed against him, left, right, top and bottom, even above at the top of his head and below at the soles of his feet. He soon realized he was buried alive, deep beneath the earth's surface. He felt like a giant worm burrowing through a gardener's bed. There was something else on his skin, too. Steam, or at least what felt like the moist warmth left on your skin after you take a hot shower and stand before the mirror shaving. I'm not supposed to be here, Gary thought, new. But yet I am, aren't I? After all, I deserve it. His heart sank at the notion. He felt along the breadcrumb ground with his fingertips. Some places in the sponge were weaker than others. He dug his fingernails into it and, with barely any room to move, slowly pawed at the sponge, scraping it away bit by bit. The crud got beneath his nails, and more oily sweat dripped off his brow. A drop leaked into his eye. It stung, but he kept digging, pawing like a dog, hoping that because the sponge felt weaker where his fingers pried, so would he find hope for escape from this confined place. I'm not supposed to be here, he thought again. There was nothing worse than being where he didn't belong. Each time he grabbed a handful of sponge, he scooped it to the side beside his palms. Soon there was no more room to push the sponge aside, and the hole he was creating began to fill quickly. As he dug, as if the sponge around him knew he was trying to get out, the more it pressed on around him, collapsed on him. Oh, he said, and spat out a bit of sponge that got in his mouth. He wished he could see. Anything would be better than this darkness. Just knowing where you were always helped, always brought comfort. The sponge beneath the fingertips gave way to an open space. He probed the hot air with his fingers. Hope. He pressed his palms where he had dug, and the sponge gave way completely, and his arms hung down into a hot room below, his arms bent at the elbows, dangling. Gary tried digging his feet into the sponge, but it was too thick. There was, however, a light down in the room. The light was dim, a golden yellow. It reminded him of his living room back home on cold winter evenings. The light was inviting. Wriggling his body between the mash of sponge, he managed to free himself a little more. The sponge began to break apart beneath his upper torso and, finally, broke apart completely. Gary hung at the waist from the ceiling of a dimly lit room, the source of the light concealed. The light was just there. He could now see what was around him. Dirt, damp soil, bathed in yellow warmth. He arched his back as hard as he could, his muscles straining, so his torso was parallel to the floor. Quickly, he stuck out his arms, pushed his palms against the inner edge of the hole. It was hard for his fingers to find purchase in the soil, but he found enough to hold himself up parallel to the floor momentarily. His back gave way before he could twist his legs and wriggle them free. He grabbed the inner edge of the soil and tried again. Twisting his hips and kicking his feet, his legs broke free and he fell to the ground of the dimly lit room. It was like landing face first hard into a mattress. Gary lay on his stomach, catching his breath. He spat out more soil, a bitter taste on his tongue. Sweat dripped off his dark hair and ran along behind his ears before trickling down and off his jaw. Face first in the dirt, there was only one thought. I'm not supposed to be here. But it all makes sense. I do belong here. I'd give anything for home. He didn't know how much time had passed before he sat up, one leg out before him, the other bent at the knee and brought up to his chest. He didn't know how much time had passed until he realized what he was wearing. Black, liquid rags covered his body, with only his neck and head and hands and wrists exposed. The inside layer of the fabric was wet against his skin. But when he felt the material, it was dry, like crusty, dirty cloth. I deserve this, he thought. Where am I? Just then a voice off to the side startled him. You got out? It said. The voice was raspy, like an old man who'd spent the better part of his life smoking. Gary looked around. His eyes must have gotten used to the light because it wasn't as dim now and the walls weren't as blackish yellow as they first were. They were grayer, like dry dirt, but the occasional sparkle in the dim light told him the soil around him was damp. Damp from what? Just damp. I can't believe you got out, the voice said. Who's there? Gary said. Where am I? Oh, calm down now, won't you? This isn't so bad. You and I probably would have met in 100 years or so, once the dirt around you wore away over time and your head could peek out. Gary's heart leapt into his throat when he saw a face on the ground in the corner of the room, looking up, as if whomever it was had been buried alive and only his face was left out in the open like a doormat. The brown eyes of the face didn't look at him when it spoke, but instead stared up at the ceiling. Backing himself away, Gary brought both his knees to his chest. The oily sweat still sat on his face. His hands were sweaty, too. It was very muggy in here, the air fuzzy, like that of a steam room, but not nearly as thick. Just a fine haze over what would normally be a clear image. And now you recoil in disgust, hiding away from a face on the floor. No wonder you're dead, friend. You probably got offed up there by some bugger who wanted your wallet, and instead of trying to defend yourself, you let him kill you when... after you gave me your wallet. It wasn't enough and you wanted more. Your watch, perhaps? Your ring? Hey, even that jacket off your back. You didn't put up a fight because you're a coward. Gary thought again about his clothes. He held his arms out before him. What is this? He asked. I don't know. I can't bloody see you. come closer. Hesitantly, Gary came over to the face and showed it the clothes that bled off his skin, as though he had cut his arms, body, legs, and the blood was oozing off him. I don't belong here. Sure I do. You do, Gary, and you know it. Tears pricked at the corners of his eyes. The face on the floor studied the clothes. There's no telling what precisely that is. I've only seen faces about this room, those like me who don't know where their body is. There is one on the wall just over there. The face's eyes cast down, pointing to the wall of soil ahead of Gary. And there was another above there, too, like yourself, before you fell through. They were all over this room at one point or another. Then the Benders came. That's my name for them, Benders. In all truth, I don't think they have a name, at least not in any language we would know. He paused. Then, my name's James, by the way. Gary, he replied. Wait, you said I was dead? What else would you be? You found yourself buried alive up there, right? The eyes stared at the ceiling again. The clothes on Gary's skin felt like a heavy wet towel. I don't belong here, Gary finally said. He felt a little bit better after saying it out loud, too. Neither do I, James said. That's all our stories. But it's our fault we're here. We didn't believe in him, so we're here. Believe in who? Before James could answer, a low howl was heard behind one of the soil walls. Benders, James said. They do that from time to time. They're hungry. James's pale gray face looked up at him. His red lips spread thin into a smile. They'll come for me one day, just like they did the others. They eat us, you see. Wait until we're nice and ripe, and then remove us from the dirt like potatoes or carrots. They're saving me for last. I was the first one here, and, like aged wine, I'll be the last to leave because I'll taste the best. I reckon I would have gone before you showed up. You probably knew me, come to think of it. I was told I'd be eaten shortly, but they were waiting for someone to replace me. A new stock, as it were, first. Now you're free. I couldn't get out when I found myself buried alive. I didn't know what to do. I slept most of the time. Now I don't know where my body is, and all I have is the face and a window into the same room for the past 2,000 years, give or take a century. 2,000 years? Is he crazy? Then Gary realized James wasn't. He finally realized where he was. He was in hell. Hell. The reality of it wouldn't set in. I still can't believe he got out, James said. Why are they called Benders? Gary asked. James sniffed. Because they can make a person do whatever they want to them. Bend their will. I've seen it before when they come out to eat you. The screams, Gary. The screams. They pull you out of the dirt and, with just one look, you succumb to them and stop struggling. Even when they take their first bite, you have a smile on your face, as if what they're doing to you is normal. As if you want them to eat you. Gary shivered, despite the damp heat of the place around him. Benders. A low rumble filled the room, and bits of dirt sprinkled down from the ceiling and off the walls. They're coming, James said. If they see you loose. When Gary looked around for a way out, he couldn't find any. Just four walls made of damp soil, nothing more. How do I get out of here? You can't. We're in a sealed room, in case you haven't noticed. The ceiling. Can I get back in there? How am I supposed to know? You're the first one who has fallen through. You haven't aged properly. They might not even want to eat you. Then again, they probably don't care. They eat a lot. This room is full of faces a short while ago. Wait a sec. That was 6 years ago. That's when it was. Man, time flies. But the rumbling grew louder. Then all was still. The dirt of the wall to Gary's right burst open in a black spray and a Bender stepped through. It stood less than 4 feet tall, its shoulders wide, its waist small. The Bender's body was humanoid. Sort of. It was naked, sexless, the skin appearing tanned in a dimly lit room. Its muscles rippled, even though it stood still. Its arms hung to the floor like an ape's, and it had only two toes, two fat toes as thick as three fingers each, with dull gray nails at their ends. Its jaw was long, and it reached to its chest. It had no neck. Long hair draped down to its shoulders, parted in the middle, revealing a flat face with a hooked nose. The bender snarled, big, block-like teeth as fat as chiclets that looked to be as hard as stone. Immediately, the bender set its gaze on Gary. The creature stalked him toward him, slow at first, as if in disbelief that Gary had ripened before his time. Soon, the bender's pace picked up. Gary darted to the side and ran into the creature and went for the hole in the wall. On the other side of the hole was a long tunnel with soil walls just like the room James was in. The lighting in the tunnel was dim, too, and, like the room, its source could not be seen. "I don't belong here." Then another voice in his head. "Sure you do. You stopped going to church when you were 18. Did you forget? If you don't believe in the big JC, then you wind up here. You're in hell, Gary. There's no getting out." Gary ran down the tunnel. Groans filled his ears, seeming to come from all around. He heard someone say, "Ow," and realized he must have stepped on a face on the floor. He glanced over his shoulder as often as he could while finding his way down the tunnel. To where it would take him, he didn't know. A low rumbling far behind him sporadically grew louder before dying off again. He rounded a bend in the tunnel. There was a muffled, "Hey," from somewhere above him. It didn't sound like a bender, but Gary also didn't know what a bender sounded like. "But it's human, isn't it? The one who just shouted?" No rumbling. Gary stopped running. He looked up and spittle caught in the back of his throat. He swallowed hard. Up against the soil ceiling was a man, shirtless, only his upper torso showing, and only his forehead and eyes. The rest of his face and the rest of his body were concealed in the dirt. "He's breaking through," Gary thought absentmindedly. "Like me. Maybe be like me. Knows he doesn't belong here. Lef me down," the man said through the layer of dirt. The rumbling grew louder and a bead of sweat stung Gary's eyes. He wiped it away. He shook his head. The rumbling grew louder yet. He had to get moving. He looked at the man. "I can't. I'm sorry." Gary glanced over his shoulder. Against the golden gray soil wall of the tunnel was the bender's shadow. "They're coming. I'm sorry." He took off down the tunnel. The further he ran, the more he saw people and faces partially covered in dirt in the walls and floor and ceiling. "So many," he thought. The rumbling died off again. Then it picked up immediately and a loud grunt echoed behind him. The bender. The moment Gary turned around to check how far behind him the bender was, the creature was already on him and wrestled him to the ground. There were no more benders behind this one. "Don't look at the eyes," Gary reminded himself. "No," he said. He struggled with the creature, keeping his eyes closed. The bender's fat fingers pawed at Gary's eyelids, trying to get them open. The bender was heavy and sat on Gary's lungs. It was difficult to breathe. Gary swung madly at the creature, his fists connecting as if pounding a slab of raw meat. They didn't have an effect on the bender. Soon his arms felt like they were filled with lead, and each swing at the creature grew more and more futile. The bender forced Gary's eyes open. Gary tried to squeeze them shut, but it was too late. The bender already had him. The creature's gaze was soft and reassuring, reaffirming in Gary's mind that eating him was the right thing to do. "But," Gary began, "but I don't belong here. I don't. Please put me back. I'm not ready yet. Let me age. Jesus, I'm sorry." He thought of James, there, alone in the room down in the tunnel. The bender's gaze continued to turn Gary's mind to jelly. "Okay, you're right," Gary said. "I deserve this. Eat me. It's okay. Please?" I belong here. The moment the hot pain from the bender's bite stung his shoulder, Gary woke up. Thank God. It was just a dream. Sweat dripped off his brow. I'm so sorry, Lord. I believe in you, Jesus. Heat flowed over his skin. His heart jumped when he spat out what felt like sponge coated in breadcrumbs. His fingers dug at the soil. So here we are. Story behind the story. Now this one was cool because like a lot of stories, well not a lot, I would say maybe a third of my short stories or so, roughly maybe a quarter, I don't know, are based on dreams. And this particular one is based on a dream. And here's what I remember from the dream. So in the dream, so you know how it is with dreams, right? Like you go to sleep and suddenly you're, you know, it's kind of dark for a bit, and then you're somewhere and the dream sequence initiates and you proceed with whatever dream you're dreaming. And so in this particular case, yeah, it was a case of where, like, I guess I had fallen asleep. There was darkness for a second. And then when I quote unquote woke up, I found myself trapped, surrounded in dirt, heavy, thick dirt. And, at first, I got, you know, in the dream, I was, you know, of course, concerned. Like, it kind of felt normal at the same time. You know how it is in dreams, you know, where, like, weird stuff feels normal because this is your brain being weird? Well, it was this case here, too. Like, this, I was trapped, but at the same time, it kind of made sense. Like, this was an acceptable place to be, you know, how your brain works in that context, right? So, anyway, but then I got scared. And then I realized, wait a minute, I'm trapped, I'm stuck. I felt like the weight of this stuff, right? And so I tried, remember, you know, scraping at the little room I had to move, you know, at the dirt with my fingers, you know, the goal being, you know, eventually loosen enough up to hopefully break through to something or some sort of clearance or some sort of something where I can get, eventually make a big enough space to get out. And I was really struggling. Like my fingers barely were moving the dirt around it. And then I got into, I guess my brain, you know, for whatever reason, the survival instinct perhaps kicks in. And I realized, then I kind of entered a state of lucid dreaming, right? Where I realized, okay, you're dreaming. This isn't real. You're stuck and it feels good. What you need to do is wake up. So, you know, I have a couple ways to wake up from a dream. I have two methods. One is it sounds silly, but in my dream, what I do is I squeeze my eyes tight really, really, really hard. You know, the kind where you like really feel it. And then when I open them up wide, hard, like fast and hard, then I'm awake. You know, and that's how I get out. The other method in dreams is, I don't know why this works, but it does, is I'll like, if I realize I'm dreaming and I want out, I will like kind of relax my body and just kind of fall straight backwards. You know, just like lean back until you fall over. And I wake up before I hit the ground. So, I don't know, survival stuff, who knows? I'm not a dream expert. The point is, I tried doing these techniques, well, not the back one, but the eye one in this dream, and I couldn't get out. I was stuck. And I tried again and again and again, and I kept being trapped. And ultimately, I think what happened in terms of the end of the dream, I got just so upset and scared that I was stuck. And then I started realizing, like in the dream, I started to think, oh shoot, like you were lucid dreaming, you realized it was a dream, you tried getting out. Normally when you realize it's a dream, you have some sort of power over the circumstance or elements in the dream. Maybe not everything, but you at least have control over at least one thing. And I had control over nothing. And I was just stuck. So in the end, ultimately, I guess my fear or my panic or my whatever you want to call it, woke me up and I was out. And it took a second upon waking in the bed for kind of reality to set in and go, okay, that was really a dream. Okay, are you sure? Yeah? Are we awake? Is this for real? You know, and you get that moment and then finally you realize, oh, thank goodness I'm awake. It was all a dream. And so, yeah, so that's how the story came to be. So that's sort of the long way of saying, but that's a fear of mine, I guess, is being trapped. Like we're talking, I'm not talking like stuck in a room or even locked in a jail. So that part doesn't bother me. It's the idea of like utter confinement. And in this case, it was dirt. Like every crevice of my body was like just covered and packed against this dirt, like, you know, meat on ice, so to speak. And I did not like the feeling. I mean, I'm an introvert, and I get even that sense of crowdedness when I'm in a crowded room, you know, with a bunch of people, you know, at a family gathering or whatever. I could feel their presence like pressing in, even though they're like 15 feet away. And so I guess it was just a fear manifest, this particular dream. Maybe I had, leading up to it, I had done some things in life, just life stuff, you know, where there was some confinement, you know, going through the store or whatever it might have been. Anyway, that's the long, long, long story behind the story. But in short, yeah, it was a fear confinement, and it manifested itself in a dream I found myself stuck in, and then a dream that I eventually woke up from, and I thought, this has to be a story. I got to do something, you know. And then that, it brought in the other elements of, you know, the other people who were trapped as well, you know. So, because, I mean, if I recall correctly, in the dream itself, it did kind of feel others were there, even though I couldn't see or hear anybody. It just that idea. You know how you could sense people, even though you don't see them? It's like when you're alone in a room, but you know someone's behind you, even though you've been alone for the past 20 minutes. It's the same idea, right? So, yeah, so I had the sense other people were around, but I never saw them in the dream. But in the particular story I wrote, yeah, I made them sort of visible, and I created a monster to sort of complement and add to the story to, you know. And the fun part about the Bender idea is simply just, you know, when it comes to monster making, like when you're not using a conventional monster like a zombie or a werewolf or whatever, or even like a Frankenstein-esque type of thing, like when you have to come up with your own style of monster, it's fun, you know, it's a challenge because you want to make it scary, but at the same time, when you're writing it, when you're describing it, you have to create enough of a visual in the reader's head or listener's head, in this case, that, you know, that this is what this thing looks like, and then all the other finer details. That's the point, is to let the reader or listener fill in the gaps and put in their own version of what this thing looks like. But anyway, that's the story behind the story. I'll leave it there. But thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Hope you enjoy the tale, and stay tuned for after the credits because, well, we're going to try to do something fun because that's what we do here, right? All right. See you then. Thanks for sticking around to after the credits. So this whole episode was a bit depressing in the context of the story that was told and being trapped and all that stuff. And, you know, I wanted to do this little post-credits thing as actually an encouragement to you. Here's this. Okay, the world we live in, we all know it's a mess, and it seems to be getting progressively messier for various reasons on various levels with various people in various circumstances. And a lot of it's sad and it's depressing, and we do feel trapped. And, you know, what do we do about it, right? And we have a choice. Bottom line is we have a choice. And I want to encourage you with this, is our choice is simply, you know, we may not be able to control the terrible things that are happening, especially the large scale things. But what we can do is we can control ourselves. We can control how we treat people. We can control what we say to them. We control how we think about them, even how we feel about them in our hearts. You know, I mean, none of us are perfect. We all mess up, big scale, small scale, really dark stuff to just mild stuff if you want to start grading morality. The point is, you know, none of us are perfect. We're all in this life together, and none of us is getting out of here alive, right? So why not? Let's try, like the saying goes, be the change you want to see. And that's my encouragement to you. You know, if you don't have, say, some nice people in your life, be the nice person. If you're used to listening to garbage from other people or downplaying things or condescending words or whatever it might be the guy or girl who speaks something nice, who speaks something uplifting, who is known for being a positive influence. People gravitate to light, right? Like, what do we do in a dark room? We always, candlelight goes on suddenly in a dark room. What do? We automatically are drawn to it, like a bug. We're just like a bug, like we are. And, you know, even when we go into a dark room, we turn the lights on and suddenly we feel better. Why? Because we can see everything and things seem manageable. They're not manageable in the dark, but they are when the lights are on. So it's the same idea here. So my encouragement is just simply, you know what, be that light, be that good thing. You know, if you could do at least one nice light up thing per day, just one. All I'm asking for is just one. That's 365 things in a year. That's amazing. To look back on a year come December 31st and go, you know what? This year I did 365 good things. Yeah, I'll leave you with that. I'll let you think about that. And I hope that encourages you. Be the change you want to see. Because you know what? In the end, we're not at the mercy of those above us. We're at the mercy of ourselves. And if we can control ourselves, we're the ones who will bring about the change. Not our leaders. Peace.